You are listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
The APN is currently looking for network sponsors. Hear your company right here at the beginning of the show in over 60 episodes a month on 18 different shows and reach 70,000 subscribers. Contact the APN via Chris at archaeologypodcastnetwork.com. That's Chris at archaeologypodcastnetwork.com to sponsor the only archaeology education and outreach podcast network.
This is episode 168 for the 17th of June, 2017.
I'm Chris Webster, and on today's episode, Chapter 9, Lodging, of the Field Archaeologist Survival Guide, Getting a Job and Working in Cultural Resource Management. Okay, as I said, this is Chapter 9 from my book, and if you want to check out the book yourself, there's a link in the show notes, and I'll mention that again at the end. But this chapter is on lodging, and you might be tempted to skip this. However, if you're somebody who travels a lot or even travels a little bit, I mean, there's actually some pretty good tips in here that I've gleaned from a lot of other people. And this isn't just me by any chance, by any means. But anyway, here's the chapter on lodging. And there are a number of quotes from other people that I got from here. So as I said, this is some information I've gained over the years and from a lot of other people. Over the years, I've stayed in a 5-star hotel, an 18th century bed and breakfast, a 3-story beach house on the Atlantic Ocean, a ranch house near Chaco Canyon in New Mexico, a townhouse in Utah, and in so many small motels and hotels that it's difficult to keep track. During 2008, my wife and I spent over 300 days in hotel rooms. That's living on the road. Before I went to graduate school, we spent over 2 months in our tent at a motel / RV park in Northern California. Lodging is one of the most important aspects to life as a shovel bum or as a person working in any profession that requires a lot of travel. Your housing situation can make or break your attitude, and you really have a lot of control over it. My wife and I once spent 3 months in the same hotel room. Before we left, we had stuff all over that room. It took a while just to pack everything up and put it back the way we found it. Personalizing the hotel room helped us stay sane and have a sense of ownership and belonging. It felt like our room, not some sterile hotel room in central Nevada. The following steps complete your journey to be a cultural resource management or CRM archaeologist. You wrote a curriculum vitae or CV and a cover letter. You applied for a job or jobs, and you had your interview and accepted a position. Now, the fine logistics of being a traveling archaeologist begin. There are many ways in which people live and work while on the road, and the method you choose often depends upon the amount of per diem you get. Some live as cheaply as possible by camping or sleeping in their cars, while others stay in various types of hotel, motels, and still others have vans or RVs to travel and sleep in. The choice depends largely upon the company you are working for and the region you're working in. Company hotel. This is a quote from Jeffrey Baker. There are very few times when I worked as a crew member where I was responsible for booking my own hotel. But if you are, one thing to keep in mind is that the rates for an entire week, particularly if you are there for multiple weeks, are often cheaper than daily rates for 5 days. Also, calling a hotel or motel rather than booking on the internet can garner lower rates, particularly if the project is long-term. And again, that was Jeffrey Baker. Companies approach the lodging question in various ways. On the East Coast, I've generally seen companies choose and pay for a hotel for you. You have no choice of where to stay or whom to stay with. Sometimes you will get your own room, and sometimes you'll be paired up with a roommate of your choosing, especially couples. Often, you won't get a choice. And here's a call out from Jim Christensen. Don't mention you're an archaeologist when reserving a hotel room. I cannot tell you how many times I have heard we don't rent rooms to archaeologists anymore or gotten the sense that they aren't giving me the best rates because of past problems, issues, muddy towels, dead things in refrigerators, etc. Take advantage of the fact that you are on a federal project. Contractors qualify for government rates that might be lower than regular hotel rates. Boxes that can take a padlock are good, too, for storing valuables. Been ripped off by more than a couple housekeepers. If your hotel arrangements are booked only for workdays, not weekends or between sessions, talk to your crew and see who wants to go in on a storage unit. If you are a 24/7 shovel bum, it pays off to not be lugging stuff around with you between jobs. Lots of them are cheap, like $40 a month, and the convenience and security are worth the extra cost. Use credit cards, but be sure to pay them off with your own per diem. This will build your credit, but won't force you to use your own cash to subsidize company operations. And again, that was from Jim Christensen. When sharing a hotel room, and this is from Jennifer McGuire, ask before you touch anything that is not yours. Ask if they would like the shower first when you get back from the field. Ask how they feel about the TV. I almost never turn it on if I'm alone, so having it on first thing in the morning, as well as in the afternoon and at night, got annoying for me. So just be aware of your roommate's personal preferences and try to be respectful of them. And again, Jennifer McGuire. So far in my archaeological career, I've stayed in some interesting places. While working in New Mexico, near Chaco Canyon, a firm put us up in a rented ranch house 50 miles from the nearest town. There were five of us in the house, and there were an additional 15 people in several trailers outside. The house had its good points, such as the massive stone fireplace and all the wood we could burn. The water wasn't drinkable, though, and we had to make regular trips into town to fill water containers. That was our cost, too. We once did a project in North Carolina where the company rented a three-story beach house on the Atlantic coast. I was a crew chief and had the master bedroom with its own bathroom and walk-in closet. For a project in Virginia, our company put us up in an 18th century historic bed and breakfast. It was the off-season for the business, so we had the place to ourselves. Unfortunately, the cook was on vacation too. We were doing a survey of the shoreline of a large lake and traveled around it in a large pontoon boat that we parked on the dock owned by the bed and breakfast. The best part, though, was the free Ms. Pac-Man arcade game in the recreation room by the dock. The little things keep you going. Most of the time, though, you'll be in a 1 to 2 star hotel just trying to survive. And here's another quote. Never, ever let someone else pay for your motel room on the basis of price alone. I'll never forget spending a night in my clothes and waking up with a sheep pushing its head through the screen on the window. We reassured our intern that this was what the field was all about. Her first project, and she already had a real story. A flock of chickens walked into her room. And that was from John Doherty. Lodging on your own. On the West Coast and in the Great Basin, I've generally seen companies just give you a high per diem and let you choose your own lodging. On one of my past projects, there were people camping in their cars, people in hotel rooms, a couple in an RV, and a guy that just slept in his van on Bureau of Land Management or BLM land. Camping. There are special considerations if you plan to camp. Camping across much of the West is free on BLM land or in free BLM campgrounds. Often, there is no security and no camp host, so you will likely have to pack up your campsite every morning. If you travel with few possessions and are an early riser, then this might be an option for you. Finding a campground with a camp host or paying to camp in an RV park will provide the security, and often showers and internet, to leave your camp intact during the workday. Camping styles vary widely across the profession. I've seen everything from small, one-person backpacking tents to canvas teepees and everything in between. I worked with a tech that liked to just string up a hammock between a couple of trees and call it a night. I generally don't travel light when I camp. It started because my wife and I were traveling and working together. We were living on the road for about a year and wanted all the comforts of home in our tent. So I bought a tent large enough to fit a queen-sized air mattress and all our stuff. During periods of bad weather, we used to strap the mattress against the wall of the tent and bring in our reclining camping chairs. We'd set up a table between us and sometimes a heater and watch movies on the laptop. My wife has since changed careers. I'm sure it's because she didn't have this book. And now it's just me. I generally have all the same gear, but with a few exceptions. I've replaced the mattress with a comfortable, lightweight cot. It takes up less space and gives me more room to move around. I also have a few camping tables and a chair inside my tent. I like to be able to work on my computer and have a semblance of home while I'm away. RV or van. Living in an RV has its benefits and challenges. One benefit is that you can have all your things where you want them all the time. No packing and unpacking. If you work a season doing sessions the entire time, then the packing tends to get tedious and annoying, especially if you travel with a lot of things. And here's a box call out from David Field. When considering purchasing an RV, there are a multitude of considerations. Is this going to be your primary residence in and out of the field? How often will you need to move the RV? Will you be staying for long periods of time in towns without RV waste dump stations or power hookups? These may seem like boring questions, but considering them before making any decisions could save yourself a huge headache. If there is any advice I can give a field tech thinking of purchasing an RV, it is make sure you are confident in your mechanical abilities. RVs are typically built for weekend camping or week-long excursions. Most will have difficulty withstanding the constant abuse of a permanent or semi-permanent residency, not to mention rugged terrain that comes with archaeology work. Be prepared to come home from a long day of survey to a broken water heater, a leaking sink drain, a frozen dump valve, or any infinite number of problems these fiberglass boxes can throw at you. And if you can't do these things, be prepared for exorbitant repair costs. This is not meant to discourage anyone. I thoroughly enjoyed my time teching in an RV. However, be prepared for more labor and logistical planning outside of the field. And again, that was David Field. Some downsides to traveling with an RV include just finding a place to park it and paying for it. If you stay in an RV park or a campground, you'll end up paying more than you think. Most of these places have hookups for water, power, and a place to dump gray water. I'll let you work out what that is. Amenities included with an RV park or campground could include wireless internet, showers, and a small store. Of course, RVs and vans don't come cheap. Even if you manage to find a good deal and buy one, you still have insurance to worry about. In addition, most of those vehicles get less than great gas mileage. Overcome the aforementioned hurdles, and you still have challenges. Want to go to the grocery store? Gotta take the RV. Want to go sightseeing after work? Gotta take the RV. Unless you have another vehicle, bicycles, or an understanding friend, the RV could be a real pain. If you have the money, the will, and the determination to make RV life work, then I think it could be very rewarding and could greatly improve your quality of life and your attitude. Ask your grandparents if you can borrow or rent theirs for a season. I would if I could. Hotel. And I'll start with a couple quotes. My hotel holy trinity: microwave, mini fridge, and internet. Free breakfasts that don't start until 7 a.m. when you have to be in the field at 6:30? That doesn't do me any good. And that was from Jennifer McGuire. Here's another one. If you're in charge of booking the room, always strive for the holy trinity: free breakfast, free internet, and mini fridges. And that was from Bill White. Most of your lodging for archaeology work will be in a hotel room. A lot of the small towns in America do not have hotels that are listed on the popular websites such as Priceline.com and Hotels.com. A simple Google, or search engine of your choice, search of the town you need and the word hotel will usually provide a list of accommodations, some with reviews. When you call, be sure to have at the ready your list of things to ask about. So, what should you ask about? Well, before that, here's another quote. I worked for an outfit associated with a major university, and the project manager had no idea how to get a good rate on a motel. Never asked for a group rate or a weekly rate, just accepted whatever price they gave him. And that was from Jennifer McGuire. Before I even get to price, I like to make sure the hotel has the amenities I need. For long-term stays, a microwave and a refrigerator are essential. You can do without a refrigerator if you have a cooler and an ice machine nearby, but that is a hassle in the summertime. You can do without a microwave too, but be prepared to bring a hot plate and cooking equipment or something equivalent. In this day and age, having the internet is important for most people. Ask the receptionist whether the internet is wireless or Ethernet, and whether you have to pay for it separately or not. Do they have breakfast? It might save you money if they do. Find out when the breakfast starts before you decide not to bring any breakfast food. Many hotel breakfast start times are after you have to start work. Some minor things I ask about include the types of beds, two doubles or one larger bed, type of TV, I can hook my computer to certain types, air conditioning, swimming pool, laundry, and whether they have an exercise room. There are some things to think about when discussing the cost of the hotel room. Hotels often have a AAA discount. A lot of smaller chains will have a corporate discount for people working in the area, and most have weekly rates. If you get a weekly rate, find out whether their week is 5 days or 7 days. Also, find out what the refund policy is. You may have to leave early for one reason or another and would probably like your money back. Summary. Whether you choose to live in your car, in a tent, in an RV, or in a hotel room, the choice you make for lodging could make or break your sanity on a strenuous project. Even if it's an easy project, your choice of lodging could be a huge factor. Figure out whether you like to live alone in the wilderness, how important having the internet is, and how often you want to see friends and coworkers when making your decision. And again, that was from the Field Archaeologist Survival Guide, Getting a Job and Working in Cultural Resource Management from Rutledge 2014, written by myself, Chris Webster. And if you want a copy, there is a link in the show notes to the Amazon link where you can go pick one up. Thanks a lot. That's it for this episode of ARC 365. Please share this episode on your social media sites so others can have fun and learn about archaeology too. Please consider a donation to ARC 365 by sponsoring an episode for just $35. You can find the sponsor page at www.archaeologypodcastnetwork.com/sponsor ARC 365. Thanks and have a great 2017 with the Archaeology Podcast Network. The song Storm Diggin' was written, performed, and recorded by Steve Webster. This show is produced by Chris Webster and Tristan Boyle, and was edited by Chris Webster.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archaeologypodcastnetwork.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.